Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, alone words from home, alone words from.
Then we came to a huge wedding. I had never seen anything like it before, but all I could look at were the strange pale men with their metal sticks. I thought that maybe they were there to help us, but their violent ways and rough language soon told me different. Many days later, when the pale men came to move us from the strange wedding, some of the others looked pleased. I could not be happy, no matter how bad things were in that place, with its heat and dirt and death. I was right to feel bad. I had seen the water when we had arrived and had heard it moving some nights, but I could not imagine it could be so big. They pushed us into wooden boats that I thought were huge until I saw an even larger boat out in the water. I don't know if it was the water or the sight of a big boat, but one of my people jumped. I was too weak to try. Some of the pale men laughed, leaving him for a moment before they pulled him from the water. He looked very sick.
I can hardly tell you what happened next. They took my clothes and touched me and looked at me. When I tried to cover myself, they grabbed my wrists. I cried with anger and they laughed. For 3 days, those same white men watched as I crouched in a corner of that building with barely enough food or water. Others, men who were sick and beaten, sat around me and were told of what we knew. One man thought the white people would eat us. I promised to make them sick if they ate me. Of the fourth day, they opened the gates and we were moved out. I was so glad to be out of there that I willingly walked to one of their boats. It took us to a ship like those I had seen before, and that it is where you find me now.
The worst time of my life was in the despair of that stinking, black, silent hole with hundreds of men and boys. Then a white man picked me. Cassie, my wife, used to say, "I have a proud face. I think it had helped me here." This man looks different to others, cleaner with different, finer clothes. He seems to be a kind of doctor and I don't recognize his methods or tools. I am careful not to anger him.
The Industrial Revolution was the period when the slave trade reached a peak. Huge numbers of slaves were transported to the cotton fields of America's southern states in order to satisfy the ever-increasing demand for cotton yarn and materials. The conditions in the cotton mills, especially in the north of England, were appalling and were themselves akin to slavery. There was, however, a slight difference between the mill workers in England and the slaves on the cotton plantations. Tony Tipples, keeper of the Merseyside Maritime Museum in Liverpool, explains.
The conditions in the mills were pretty unpleasant, yes, very noisy, very difficult. But there is a difference, I think, in that although you may be in awful conditions, it's not quite the same as not having any freedoms and being totally belonging, totally dependent on somebody else, having no rights. At least, you know, they did have some rights.
The lack of human rights experienced by the slaves as they travelled to America is described by the people themselves.
And now I'm in the blackness of that huge boat. I didn't imagine that men could make such a place, not even the pale men. My head still hurts. Every muscle aches from crouching in this tiny space, and the metal rings on my ankles and wrists bite into my skin. I'm so scared that my body rebels against everything I eat or drink. A man near to me. I didn't understand his words. He wouldn't eat, so the pale men took him out through the hole in the roof. We think they put hot rocks to his mouth. Now his lips are so burnt he cannot speak of it. I must try to eat.
At first there was much room in the space under the floor, yet we were chained together. We soon found out why. Through the holes in the walls we could see the coasts, and sometimes the ship stopped to collect more people like us. Very soon there was no room to move with so many women and children. Then the land disappeared as we moved in the direction of the setting sun. Then the crying and the heat and the smell got worse. Sometimes we were taken outside to exercise, but there was always white men staring with their guns pointed at us. At night they get noisy and take some women away. The women always return crying. I don't want to imagine what happens to them. Last night there was a storm. I had never been so close to death or so scared, yet I would happily fall to the bottom of this ocean if it would take me away from these white men and what they plan for us. Some of the children were clinging to me. I must try to help them, although they may be better dead as well.
Days have passed and I am grateful to this man. I am in the sunshine. I help him clean and heal the people still in the hole. They have dirty sores under their metal rings, wounds from weeping, and many cannot eat or drink. They get so thin, I think many will die before we see land, even some of the white men. Today, I wish to be in the hole with the other people. White men are demons, and I fear I am less Asante being near them. They spit and kick and whip children and women, sometimes each other. Then, they even threw a newborn baby into the water. I stopped his mother following him, and then we sat and cried.
Tony Tibbles also speaks of the conditions on board the slave ships.
It was pretty awful. The men were separated from the women and children. They were generally shackled. They would have been very closely held together, probably having about 18 inches of space. And, you know, it would be hot and humid, the stench was appalling. I mean, it's said that you could smell a slave ship coming from miles around. And the food was quite poor and monotonous. Basically, things like beans, yams. Water was obviously a very important element, but it was also a situation in which disease easily spread, so that mortality on board these ships was quite high. Certainly in the early days, something like one in five of the enslaved were dying on the voyage. Now, as particularly as the 18th century went on, there were some attempts to try and alleviate that situation. And later in the century, certainly on British ships, you had to have a surgeon on board.
When Pope John Paul II went to Senegal in February 1992. He was deeply moved when he visited Gorée, the place from where slaves were collected and dispatched across the ocean.
Oui, en même temps que ma joie, je vous fais part de ma vive émotion. Gorée, symbole de la venue de l'évangile de liberté, et aussi, hélas, le symbole de l'effroyable égarement de ceux qui ont réduit en esclavage des frères et des sœurs auxquels était destiné l'évangile des libertés. Mais en venant à Gorée, où l'on aimerait pouvoir se livrer entièrement à la joie de l'action.
Allow me to express my conflicting emotions at visiting this African shrine of black sorrow. It is the emotion that one naturally experiences in a place like this, so profoundly marked by the inconsistencies of the human heart, the scene of an eternal struggle between light and darkness, between good and evil, between grace and sin. Gorée, the symbol of the coming of the gospel of freedom, is also, unfortunately, the symbol of the appalling madness of those who reduced into slavery the brothers and sisters to whom the gospel of freedom was destined. In all truth and humility, this sin of man against man, this sin of man against God, must be confessed.
convient que soit confessé en toute vérité et humilité ce péché de l'homme contre l'homme, ce péché de l'homme contre Dieu, qu'il est long le chemin que la famille humaine doit parcourir avant que ses membres apprennent à se regarder, à se respecter l'image de Dieu, pour s'aimer enfin en fils et fille du même Père céleste.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, alone, words from home.